Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years and number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, how are you?
You know, doing good. Doing really well. Got the post-Labor Day, blues over with yesterday and back in the saddle today.
It doesn't feel like Wednesday at all. It just kind of feels like kind of feels like a Thursday or something. Like, it's, oh my gosh,
yeah.
We still got to do all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it's a short short week, it still feels like it's a long week.
I kept getting yesterday thinking today it was like the days were wrong. I'm like, wait a minute. Somebody's like, can you have a meeting tomorrow? No, I already have this. Wait a minute. Wrong day. It's kind of a.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's getting into that fall feeling, even in Hawaii, it's kind of getting into that more like fall's coming in and things are changing.
Yeah.
So,
do you get a fall feeling in Hawaii?
For me, yeah. I've always been able to feel the subtle changes, even though it's warm all year long. You can see the subtleness of the seasons. You really can. And in the winter, like in January, January is more rainy. And so you can even feel the differences. I think it's still tropical, but yeah, there are subtle changes. But not like you guys get, not like we get on the East Coast when I'm over there. It's definitely different.
Yeah, and, you definitely get the hard seasons changing, But
yeah,
it's so we're probably the last a couple of weeks, maybe 2-3 weeks left in using our pool. September is going to usually be warm, and then October, I think it starts to really cool down here. So,
interesting.
Yeah, this show today, again, very, very excited. Second half, if you're just tuning in, a couple of things. Let me give you our phone number, 347-945-5428. Again, 347-945-5428. And whether on the first half you have questions or comments as regards the real estate topic, or in the second half, if you've want to talk to our guest, the second half of the show today, Bill Such, he is the executive director of the Jesus Center in Chico, California, and that's an outreach to the homeless. They've got all kinds of things. It's not just a soup kitchen. They do a whole lot more than that. They have Bible studies. Yeah, and it's kind of along the lines of your buddy on Oahu, right? Your pastor friend that we talked to, Charlie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Charlie Lorenz, Pastor Charlie Lorenz from Word of Life. They have the huge, they do so much with the, to give food to homeless. It's over, it's like over 100,000 pounds a month. I was just... Yeah, I can't wait to hear this. We have a really big homeless problem in Honolulu, and I'm always, buying food. The other night I was walking in Waikiki, and, a woman's like, you have a quarter? And I said, no, because I'll carry the debit card and a license. I don't try not to carry my pocket my purse if I'm walking. But I said, no. I said, wait a minute, I'm going to go in the ABC. What do you want to eat? You want a sandwich? Because I want a 99 shot, or she wanted a shot, And I said, I'll buy you food, but I'm not buying you alcohol. And this woman was more on her feet. Some people are laying there, and she's like, okay. I said, you want to come on it? And then she said, she got up and came with me. And some can't, it's just a different, and it's really hard. You kind of want to round them all up and say, okay, who who wants to help, who doesn't want, you know what I mean? Like, it's so, people assume
yep.
so many things, and it's just a terrible tragedy. And there's another guy in another corner that I talked to a couple weeks ago, and he says he can't, I bought him food. Well, I just can't, you know not to give money because it's going to go to alcohol or drugs. Not that you never can, sometimes it's just end
yeah.
up giving some, but. But he's having a hard time getting around, and he said his hands, he used to be able to do so much work with his hands. He can't do it now, and he really smells. I mean, he's really, it's sad. And he said that the VA was helping to pay for a studio, like, in Makiki, which means he has to take two buses, and he can't climb all the way up the steps. And I said, were you a veteran? And he goes, no, but I helped in I helped with on Pearl Harbor working there over the years, you know, years ago. But he said that, but I said, why don't, you know, but he, you know, some of these guys are not all completely mentally challenged. Some of them are really, you know, and it would be great if we could decipher to help, like the mentally challenged, help them, right? And the ones that need to get work, help them, you know, and I'm
yeah.
so excited to hear this.
Sort them out.
In the second half to see how people do it, you know, because it's, yeah, it's really, really hard. So
well,
go ahead, Randy. I didn't mean to interrupt, but it just brings me up, you know, out in the last couple of weeks of a couple of homeless situations, too.
Yeah. Well, this guy, Bill Sutch, I had coffee with him a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about exactly what you're just saying. How do you, you know, how do you sift and sort and refer them to the, you know, the best? I mean, you know, because we human beings are, you know, spiritual, we're emotional, we're physical. Some of the issues are physical. They're chemical issues.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the issues are emotional, and it's all kind of wound together. And yes, some of the issues are spiritual. And literally in one person who shows up on his door, you know, you've got all those things going on, and how do you begin to, you know, kind of sort all that out for them? And he kind of simplifies it. You know, people who work with those kind of folks day in and day out know how to simplify it. They go, you know what? You just love them. You know, you just love
yeah.
them. You talk to them.
Yeah.
You just hang out with them.
Exactly.
Let them know you love them. And it's amazing
exactly.
how a lot of that stuff gets sorted out as they begin to share their story and feel safe with you. And then you can refer them to, you know, where they need to go. So sometimes I think we get all complicated.
Thank you.
And yeah,
no, I agree.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of places that just there's just there. It's just really, it's a mess. It's just really sad, and you know, and it's just sad. So well, we don't have. Oh my gosh, we only have about 20 minutes of the first half, right? So the first half today is basically about a lot of loan changes that are going on in the government with loans, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA loans. And a lot of the changes are being put out there like they're really to help the consumer and protect the public, et cetera. I believe they are, but I believe too many changes are being made, and some of them are drastic, and they're really going to hurt the little guy, because a lot of the changes that have been made and that are coming down the pike are, you know, loans requiring more and more money down, loans requiring some of the loans being disregarded altogether, like interest-only loans you can still get, but they're talking about doing away with it. We'll go over some of this in more details, and, of course, we can only give a little bit of information on the show due to time. So if you have questions, please call in 347-945-5428. We welcome your comments. Please email us at realityradio@realityuniversal.com. And we're going to go over guidelines and some changes, and should you get involved, the answer is absolutely 100% yes, because voices, people, you are the voters, and you can make changes. And these changes are coming up, you know, of course, through committees, through coming all the way down, but the laws have to be put in first, you know. So you want to get in touch with your local state senator. You want to really get involved and find out what's going on, so that if there's petitions circulating around, you can get involved. It is so important now to get involved, and so many people get so busy. We get busy in our own lives that we're sitting on the sidelines and we're not really involved in what's going on in the big picture when it comes to the legislative issues. And this is definitely a situation where we need to get involved, because otherwise a little guy is not going to be able to buy houses eventually, because they're making it so strict. It's good to be able to protect the for the loans. You want to make sure that they're good marketable loans, but there's ways to do that without cutting out many of the programs that have worked for years. It's almost like, you know how you see things happen and they want to make changes, but somebody's going to get hurt, and there's a diplomatic way to do this. You know,
yeah.
So it's definitely, we have, for example, you know, FHA is changing they're working on down payments. They're changing the mortgage. You have to have mortgage insurance now. Well, you had to have it for years, and then they changed that after you. With FHA, you had to have it even if you had 22% into your loan before. But they changed that over the last 10 years. Now they're reverting back to the old ways. Some of the FHA loans have problems with condos. A lot of the condo buildings can't get FHA loans because they have higher owner occupancy rates that are necessary nowadays. We still have VA loans, which are 100% financing. There's USDA loans, which are 100% rural loans. So we still do have some programs out there, but they're becoming less and less. And, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are huge. And if the government really tries to get rid of it in the next 5 years, which is what they're talking about, that could have major impacts on our economy in the next 5 years. So we wanted to mention this because it is important for you to get involved. And you can go to HUD.gov. HUD.gov and learn a lot of information about what the government's doing, what they don't do. And, you know, when I start to talk about this, I go, wow, you know, I'm putting this out there and I only have, you know, 20-some minutes to talk about it. It's just not enough time, Randy. It's just not enough time to really get into the basics of what's happening and how we need the people's voice right now. I've been in the industry since 1985, and I've been a member of the National Association of Realtors, which has over 1,200,000 plus members. And all of us that belong to that organization belong to local boards. There's about 1,400 plus local boards around the country. And we have guidelines that we follow. There's also RPAC, which is part of this, was started in 1969, and RPAC is set up as a business, and it is set up to help with the laws and to petition and lobby, et cetera. So real estate agents, realtors, we all donate into RPAC every year, and RPAC does a fantastic job of pushing and pushing to protect the public. Many, many laws, for example, there's been one on the books for a while now where they want to take away the interest deduction for homeowners in the United States of America. And we take it for granted, and there are a lot of countries that do not have interest write-offs. One of the big things of owning a home is to be able to, you know, get your tax write-off. So if you're paying $2,000 a month rental, you could, you know, in the same home, you're going to be really only paying $1,400 on a mortgage by the time you get tax write-offs. This is just an estimate. But one of those items, it's huge if they took that away. And it's been on the books to take it away. And RPAC, the NAR and groups have fought and fought and fought and been one of the major players to stop it from going away. This is just, when I say we don't have enough time to talk about, this is a topic we could talk about for days, but it would certainly require, you know, so many hours, at least a good seminar, to go into the whys and the P's and Q's of what's happening here. So we need your help. I mean, we can't, agents, brokers, you know, lobbyists can't do it alone. We really need the people's voice. The changes are coming too fast, and the sad part about it is, if somebody's very, very wealthy, this isn't going to affect them anyhow. They're not going to go in and try to get an FHA loan. Well, I don't want to say no one will ever get an FHA loan if they're very wealthy. That's the wrong statement. But the people that need to get in and don't have the cash, right? But say they have good credit, and some of these loans are devised to help you, that's usually the biggest problem, is somebody doesn't have the cash to get in, you know, and we just don't want to see those go away, because it's going to get to a very big divide where you'll have renters and you'll have owners, and now's the time to get involved. Now's the time to get a hold of your state senator, call your local county councilman, say, you know, I want to, what's going on when it comes to home ownership, or what laws do we have a say in, what can we do? Voting, of course, we know, I mean, without saying that, that's huge, you know, to figure, get involved and vote, we know that. But this is getting into more issues. A lot of people, I run into a lot of people that say, well, I write letters, I write to this one, I write to that one. That's great, but we really, you know, there's, you can get involved even in a larger way and get involved with signing petitions. Nowadays, with the internet, it's easy to pass those around. Just very, very important because, the writing's on the wall and it's happening, and it's surprising me that it's happening. I'm not saying that the government and that the lenders shouldn't start saying, hey, we've got to make sure that we're packaging loans that can sell. I totally agree with that, and you should, and we need to do that. But it's getting to be a little too drastic right now. And so you can tell I'm passionate about this just because it's not fair. It's not fair to change everything around in a way that is not going to be protecting our little guys.
Well, yeah, and I guess it's really a matter of, with all that the banking industry has been through, you know, and the mortgage crisis and all that the last few years, it really does seem like big business or, you know, big banks are, I'm going to be trying to be polite here, but protecting themselves more and more, right, to the detriment of regular folks. It just keeps getting harder and harder. Like you'd said, we've talked about this before. It's getting harder and harder for regular folks to qualify. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's this growing sense of, of disillusionment, you know. And I know we don't want to get all political, but you and I spent plenty of time around the elections talking about why we thought it, you know, should have been otherwise, but
if you noticed, some people are in politics from the time they're young, or they're in the families, you know, like the Kennedy family. I mean, God, how can you not be in politics, right? Or, you know, God bless them, and I my hats off to families that have been in that, and they're just amazing what they do for service for our world and communities and government, etc., for the people. The times have changed so drastically. And you know how when we're younger and we grow and we have businesses, like I've had my own businesses for years, and then you get to a point, you're getting older, and you look at it all and it's much clearer and you're going, oh my gosh, how can we not get involved? Because it's really, it's happening. And it's going to affect our kids and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren and the world. And so I think, but it's because of social media and social networking, and because we're able to communicate on a much larger scale faster. So there's pros and cons to that. I mean, look at when we had the Benghazi, you know, issue. It was horrible, and then people were rioting in embassies all around the world, and that was due to social, you know, how fast they could communicate through the social networks, right? So that was a bad thing because they were doing things that weren't good and because they were kind of getting into a rage. On the flip side, when it's done for good, it's phenomenal and great how fast we can communicate. But I think right now, you know, people might say, oh, my gosh, I don't have the time to volunteer a few hours a week to get involved with this. I understand that, but you can spend time to just read and get in touch and go, hey, who's pushing this movement? Who's doing what? Because the deep pockets and the bigger picture here and what's happening is not for the little guy. And I don't care what anybody wants to say. I don't care which side of the fence you're on. I'm not saying that, you know, in the scope of it, what's the trend right now is not helping the little guy. And it's when I say the little guy, nobody's a little guy. People are wealthy. If you have your family and you love people, wealth is not about your money and your assets. So when I say little guy, I mean the people that need help as far as being able to get the home ownership and the programs and the assistance so that you can have your family life and feel good and happy and wealthy in your own rights and what you deserve to be able to do here in the United States. You know, things are being pulled away, and it's not a simple process. I mean, I hats off to everybody trying to go through and make all this work. You know, it's very hard, but that's where we need our voices heard. And I guess what would you term it? Little guy doesn't sound right. I guess it just is more
regular.
What's the better word?
just well, regular
the,
folks.
Well, the word, like, you know, hey, they're working, trying to do it, and happy, you know, doing it. This, but we need help. We don't need to be squashed and have the rights taken away and not have the help that's been around for a long time. Because it's but the writing's on the wall. I mean, you can see so many benefits and rights have been taken away, and I mean, this trickles over even to other things that we need to get involved in with politics. But that's what we have. Our Constitution's been set up. We do have people to go to. We have, you know, the state congressmen are there for a reason too. And I just think I just want to put it out there that yes, please get involved. You can Google information. Of course, HUD.gov we mentioned. You can look at the RPAC site, at National Association of Realtors. There's a lot of information out there, good information. And you know, I want to, when we get involved, we need to be peaceful about it. We, you know, the ranting and raving, it's really difficult. You hear it. We all get upset because this is happening, that's happening, or one person starts discussing and someone else is yelling, you know, because it's just a, we need to diplomatically just get involved and realize that this is not just for us. This is not just about us. This is to help everyone, you know, and
go ahead.
Well, I guess it's kind of like some things weren't broken. You know how they say if something isn't broken, don't fix it, try to fix it?
Mm-hmm.
Some things weren't broken. And because such a disastrous situation occurred with, you know, loans being able to be given to people if they could breathe, they went to the extreme. They're going to the extreme now, instead of, you know, and it's just needs to be worked out in much better ways than what's happening right now. Otherwise, I can see us having a country. I mean, how many the kids nowadays? They're starting out. They're getting, you know, starting out early. They're having a tough time getting out and buying properties and getting into things that we could get into easier years ago.
Oh, so. Is it a? I mean, HUD.gov, of course, like you say, is a great place. Is what about you know, just contacting local congressmen, state level?
Yes, absolutely. You know,
Because it varies. Again, these regulations, loan guidelines vary state to state. Correct? For the most part.
Oh no. Yes, no. No. Well, the most of the loan guidelines that we're talking about are national, on a national level. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, you're right. They do. Well, the bigger pictures and the bigger rules and laws that are really hurting are on a national level. Yes, you're correct that different guidelines vary state to state. Like, for example, if it's an FHA loan, different states, different counties have different amounts that they can lend on, right? Because it's based on, they do their research on the medium income level, et cetera. So, yeah, they can vary state to state. It can vary, but on the national is where we're talking about. So, yes, the state senators are going to be huge because for each state they're going to have a vote, right, on a national level. And then there's committees. So, yeah, it's definitely go to your – you can go to your county, you know, can ask them, because I'm sure they're involved too, because when you get into the local county and your community, the politics there – is going to be involved somewhat too, because they know that home ownership and the keeping people above water and having their dreams and being able to be free is still in their agenda. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's very important.
So kind of a both and or all of the above, however you can, kind of a full court press in that regard, if we can communicate to lawmakers and to others, you know, again, and we've seen, you know, over the years in various industries, the power of, you know, of the people, the power of the people to, you know, affect change if they get, you know, organized and mobilized. And but you just see this perfect storm, sadly. And I feel like this comedian who said, you know, I really don't want to talk politics, but here goes. No, but I feel like it's a perfect storm, because these guidelines that are coming from, you know, again, the federal level, the federal government, is definitely impacted by policies, you know, from Washington. And the challenge is the perfect storm then is you've got this other side of kind of the what's the word I want? Entitlement, you know, hey, the government's going to take care of us. As the government grows and there's this idea that the government's going to take care of us, I don't know, I see, it seems like I see a lot of younger couples, you know, giving up on the American dream, and it's, you know, it's too bad. And because
it doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to happen, you know. And there's nothing,
no.
you know, now thank God for VA, there's still VA loans, which is 100% financing, which is still there. And hopefully they'll never take that away. Hopefully they won't even touch it. You know, they do have different loan guidelines where they have to have a little bit more, finance a little bit more because there isn't a down payment there, you know, but that's still there. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it really does take, it's part of, I think it should be part of our duties of being an American citizen here in the country to somehow get involved a little bit more with that, because we do, they listen to the people. If you've got, you know, millions of people speaking up on this, they listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think when we have such news media and such going out, and they're able to stand up there and say, we are doing this to help you, trust us. Of course, you do have to trust the, you know, the higher-ups. No, you do have to trust to a point, because you have to have some respect and let them do their job. Trust, we're going to be there to help you. But you know what? It's not working. We still need to say, okay, I believe you're going to help, but how are you helping and what's going on? And get involved and say, this is what, you know, why do we need to, I understand we need more money into a loan, but maybe not as much money for a certain loan. If the people say their credit's perfect, and they have the income, and everything else fits in and makes sense. Years ago, I've been in since 85, years ago when they underwrote loans, the underwriters, and it's not that it never happens now, and it does, I mean, portfolio loans are going to be higher loans and stuff, like higher amounts usually, so it's, we have different situations going on here. So when I speak on this radio show, you know, I'm always having to do a disclaimer that, you know, it can apply to many different situations. So years ago, we actually, the lenders, the underwriters would look at the story and say, this makes, okay, wait a minute. Because you can see, you can look at a credit report, you can see if somebody just habitually doesn't care about paying their bills and they don't care and they had a ding here and there, or say they had a tragedy and there's a reason that they had to file bankruptcy or they had to go through foreclosures and short sales and all that. You can see it, the pattern is very obvious. When somebody's an underwriter, they can see a lot of things. Well, in the old days, and I want to say the mid-90s, somewhere around the mid-90s, they started the credit scoring thing. Before that, they would go in, so you'd have, I remember in Pikesville, Maryland, years ago in the late 80s, a guy was jumped and stabbed a bunch of times, and he lived, thank God, but he lost everything. Lost his job, he was out of work for a long time, you know, had to file bankruptcy, everything, and I was able to get him a loan on another house not that long after he was okay, because of his story. Because it made sense, and he had a lot of other factors to show that he's a very responsible person. This isn't something he could control. So now, but if you fast forward and somebody, the credit score would have been too low, they wouldn't even, you know, somebody it wouldn't be able to get many different loans, right? Because, sorry, they're putting them into a package of other loans that they're assuming aren't any good because the score is low. So if we could go back to some of this, you know, and it could be done. It could really be done if they got up there and you say, okay, this is how we do it. This is how we do it, and we aren't discriminating, because you certainly don't want someone saying, oh, you gave this one a favor but not the other. So there's just so many, which we don't have enough time to go into, but there are ways to get this done. And pass the love around and do it politically correctly and be civilized about it. But we got to look at the future, because what we're doing is we're squeezing everything out of the people here. And what's happening is, at the same time, it's affecting their mindsets, which I'm sure our guest is going to talk about how with the homeless and how that it's affecting everybody, and the fear out there and the anger is it's so I want to say, because of course I've been in real estate for years. Please get involved. And like Randy said, you can contact your state, you know, state senator, state legislator. You were saying the congressman, right? County councilman. They're going to know. They're going to tell you. You can even call and make an appointment, or you can just call on the phone and say, I'm really concerned about what's going on with the lending industry in our U.S., you know, because you have to pick and choose a little bit. You can't get involved in every single thing or you drive yourself crazy, right? But I want to find out to start somewhere, and then you see how the process goes. I want to see, what can I do? Are there any petitions going on? Is there anything they need, that votes? I mean, because something, and that's, you know, it starts with that, a phone call, checking in, getting on there and Googling, because it really is, it's that serious right now. And they're working on making these changes. Their plan is the next 5 years, and there's changes coming down the pike that are just, you know, left and right, and I just, it can work, but it can't work carte blanche where we just, like, And you're going to have, I mean, if somebody's sitting up there making these changes, they're probably saying, wait a minute, of course we're doing those things. Well, we need the public involved. So we are just about out of time.
Wow, good stuff. Again, RealtyUniversal.com, the website for all of the above and so much more, RealtyUniversal.com. And again, our number is 347-945-5428. We are Realty Universal Radio on the air everywhere. And if you've just tuned in, this first half we talk real estate. The second half we talk to people who are making a difference in our world. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk to Bill Such, who's the executive director of the Jesus Center in Chico, California. So a guy who is on the front lines in terms of ministering to people who you know, the least of these is really the way to describe it. So we're gonna talk to Bill and get inspired and fired up and encouraged. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
Real estate is still a solid investment to invest in if you are in for the long haul. It can also be one of the best investments of your capital if handled correctly. In the United States, we are fortunate to have the tax write-offs that we take for granted while owning property. To obtain the best value for your real estate, there needs to be a market of both buyers and sellers, as well as a means of bringing the two together. Now more than ever, due to the recent loan crisis, even with bringing buyers and sellers together, there needs to be a way to make the financing work if a loan is needed. There are still many options available, and we can help. Whether you're a buyer, seller, going through a short sale, investing at the top or bottom, we have trained Realty Universal members in each state and affiliates who can customize your process the way it will work best for you. We do advise that you coordinate with your accountant and real estate attorney so your plan is intact. We have all learned through this economy that planning and averting pitfalls can make a world of difference in our futures. Ultimately, you have to rely on you. After consulting with the experts, we set you up to win.
It's your Minute with Maxwell. Here's author, speaker, and mentor to millions, your friend, John Maxwell.
When I was in college in Psych 101 as a freshman, we took a test to determine our creativity. There were 17 in the class, and I remember it well because I finished at the bottom of the class. Here's what I did that really sparked the creativity of my life. I began reading, and I began filing. Somebody else's idea helped me to create an idea, and before long, I began to sense that there was creativity within me. I just realized that I had to, in the beginning, borrow it from others and then build on it. Oh, I love that. Borrow it and then build on it. So if you look at yourself not as a creative person, you can't be any worse than me. I was at the bottom of my class. 60 books later, I've learned to be creative, but it was a learned art in my life. So go inside. It's there. Pull it out.
Thanks, John. We trust we added value today. For the video version of The Minute with Maxwell, go to johnmaxwellteam.com.
John Maxwell, thanks, man. Realty Universal Radio, the name of the program, and we are back. And this half hour will be flying by, as always, because we get inspired, encouraged, motivated, and mobilized, really. That's the goal. I mean, we can get encouraged and inspired, and that's cool, but unless we actually get mobilized to be a part of the change in this world, to be the hands and feet, really, of Jesus, it's kind of all just talk. And so a guy who walks the talk on so many levels, and man, this is going to be fun. Bill Such is with us. He's the executive director of the Jesus Center in Chico, California, and he's got quite a story, personal story of his own, and we're going to get into that in a bit, but I really want him to talk about what is going on at the Jesus Center kind of across the board, give everybody a really good idea of kind of the breadth of the ministry. So, Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm really pleased to be on the show today and to have opportunity. I'm not sure that I can really inspire people, but I will do the best that I can in the sense of the journey that I've had and the passion that I've got for actually recognizing that every single one of us is important and needs to be treated as we would like to be treated ourselves.
That's good. That is so good. So because, again, we're an internet radio show and literally worldwide, no doubt we have some listeners in Butte County who are familiar with what you're doing. I promoted on our Facebook that you would be on, so I know we have people listening in Chico, but most of our audience really unfamiliar with the Jesus Center. So why don't we start there? Why don't we just kind of talk about what you guys do at the Jesus Center day in and day out?
Yeah. Basically, the Jesus Center initially started as a way of providing food for homeless people or people suffering from substance abuse many years ago. And from that, we've developed, because especially the way the economy's gone since 2008, where we're now dealing with unemployment issues, with people just basically trying to survive and find meaning within their lives. So we serve food. We serve up to 200 meals twice a day. We go through 105,000 meals a year. And we have a shelter for women and children, so women who are living on the street can actually stay with us and get their lives together. They can stay for 2 weeks with no questions asked. And then if they want to stay up to 6 months, they can stay there. And they work on a program of basically working towards self-sufficiency, where people become independent. We also have a resource center in which we provide access to people who are homeless in respect to having a mail, where they can have mail sent to the Jesus Center, and they can use the computers there to connect with a job board with the local economic department. And we have different organizations that come in that actually provide resources from Social Security to drug rehabilitation and so forth. So that we try to sort of have a clearinghouse element in which people could come in and they can get resources to become independent. That's what we do on the surface. Our theological basis is that we found something with this person, Jesus. We found him, he's changed our lives, and what we want to do is to provide resources for people who are homeless or drug addicts, recovering alcoholics and so forth, people who are out of prison or jail, parolees, who've got no place to go, people who are unemployed, anyone who wants to improve their lives. We want to try and provide whatever resources we can. And our mission statement, which we got a number of years ago, which we all worked out, was that what we do is we offer hospitality in the name of Jesus. And the word hospitality is what we picked. In my former life, before I was at the Jesus Center, I was a New Testament scholar. And the word hospitality in the Koine Greek of New Testament, you can actually work it out. It's philoxenia. Philos obviously is love of, as in Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. And xenos is, you know, when somebody's xenophobic, they're afraid of strangers and so on. So philoxenia means love of strangers. So the Jesus Center's sort of mandate or mission statement is: we love strangers. We love people that we don't know, because we bring them in and we offer them what we do. We offer them basic resources to try and improve their lives.
Wow. That is so cool. Loving strangers in Jesus' name as people come to your door. And I know you, Bill, we talked about it a little bit when you and I had coffee a few weeks ago. And, you know, the complexity, is going on in somebody's life when they show up at your door. I mean, a lifetime of course, wounding, possibly a lifetime of drug or alcohol addiction. And that's really, obviously, that's a tall order. And so I know in some ways it must seem mind-boggling. And yet, again, I think you kind of go back to it's not us that does this, but Jesus using us, right? You're just available, and let Jesus do the heavy lifting with these folks. Obviously, you refer people to where they need to be referred to as you get to know them. But is that kind of the process? You just kind of love on them, get to know them, kind of hear their story, and as you spend time with them, you're able to then, I think, more intelligently refer them to maybe where they might get some help for their particular situation.
Well, the great thing for us, in a sense, is that people come to us because they want to eat. It's as simple as that. And so they come into the dining room, and we're not a rescue mission like a traditional rescue mission where you have to hear, say, for example, a sermon from me before you eat or something like that. We have what we call civil etiquette. Civil etiquette means that if you even if you're high or drunk, but if you can hold yourself together and there's no abusive language and no violence and so forth, and that you respect who we are, you can come in and you can have a meal. The only thing that we do in a sense that's overtly Christian is that we pray before we have the food, and we thank God for the community that's provided the meal, and we thank God for the people who are eating the meal. But as I've said to occasional atheists or people who object to us, I would say, well, just stay out in the parking lot if you don't want to actually go through the prayer with us, and then you can come in and eat. In other words, it's basically civil etiquette from that standpoint. And so people come in and they eat. And as I said, it's all kinds of people. People down on their luck, young families where the husband's lost a job and so forth, and he's basically trying to survive with his children and his wife, or you've got somebody who's come out of prison, has got nowhere to stay, or you've got people who are living a life of using drugs and addicted to drugs of whatever kind, but they need to eat, so they come to the Jesus Center. Well, the great thing about us, in a way, is that after a while of being there and eating is that we get to know who the people are who come to us, and we can start talking to them. And in starting talking to them, what we want to do ultimately is to get down there and say, you know, there's a different way of life. If you're a drug user and you're basically enslaved to this drug, and you come here and receive community food to actually eat, we want to help you to become independent. We want to help you to become a better person. And so from that standpoint, we have access to people. I look at it theologically in the sense of, you know, one of the things that we get criticized on is that we're sort of enablers. Well, if you weren't there, people, you know, wouldn't be around and so forth. Well, that's not true because of the way the economy is. But I suppose we are enabling people in the sense we're enabling them to eat by providing them with food. But we provide pressure too. As I've said to you, we've got several areas of resources that we put people towards to say there's a better life than this. But initially people come in and they eat food. And the way I justify it is what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount when he said, look, you are to love your enemies because God sends the sun and the rain on the just and the unjust. In other words, then God loves his own enemies in the sense that people who hate him or revile him, or don't want anything to do with him, what does he do? He sends what the reformers call common grace or common blessings, and that is love for one's family and so forth, the sun, the rain, the goodness of life, and all that it means. That's there for all those people, whether they love God or whether they're not. Don't love God. And so Jesus uses that as an example to say that's what God does, so therefore that's what we should do. Of course, he gives that really stringent element of we are to love our enemies. So from my standpoint, the Jesus Center, my notion is with the idea of, well, what we do is we offer food to you whether you're a drug user, whether you're not a drug user. In other words, then, we are giving you part of common grace, what God's given us and our community, which is food, which is drink, which is sustenance and so forth. And then in doing that, then you come into our auspices, our place, and we want to talk to you. And we see sufficient people who come through who are interested in saying, ultimately, I want to improve my life. And that's where it comes in terms of what we do, in terms of trying to help people then to become independent.
Well, that's fantastic. Randy and I were talking briefly when he was in the beginning of the first half of the show, when he was talking about you, you know, introducing what we were going to be on the second half. And I was mentioning there's a really large homeless problem in Honolulu. And I was telling Randy, I won't go into a couple stories about, I'm always buying food for them. You know, I want to do that. And they'll say, well, you know, give me a quarter or give me a shot. And it's like, no, I'll buy you food, but I'm not going to buy the alcohol, you know. And I was saying it's sad. I'm looking at situations like, how do we decipher? Because it's like you want to have, I just want to grab everyone up and say, let's have a meeting, you know, get everybody together, you know, because they're lingering. And a lot of them know each other, you know, and you want to say,
right,
let's get a meeting together and decipher, okay, first off, like with the hierarchy of needs, I mean, the food, the water, the shelter, that's going to be first, right? And if people, and then how do we decipher if somebody does have, say, a mental issue to where they need to go here, or we know they need the food and the love and just don't, you know, just deal. But
yeah.
But I'm just wondering, you know, as a layperson being out there going, you know, my heart, I can't, I have to help. I mean, but I want to help in a bigger way. And you go, what you're doing is so phenomenal. So it's like, how do you decipher? Because you almost want to say, I've talked to some that, you know, said, hey, I could work with my hands before, now I can't. And he, you know, he could barely walk. And, you know, there's just so many reasons people are ending out on the streets.
Right.
And, you know, so how do you help that way? You get it, talk them into going somewhere or what? You know, because it's just a really tough situation, I think.
As you get to know a person, you find out what their situation is. Like you say, there are some people who, in a number of respects, this has been a frustration point for me, is that let's say somebody's 40 or 50 and they're now recovering from their drug use, whatever it is, and they're looking for a job, and they're going to be applying for a job at Home Depot. Well, with due respect, they're not going to get that job, and they, because they're up against 30, 40 people, and you've got somebody there who's he's got no work history, and frequently the effects of drug use in the teens or 20s has a stultification effect upon your mind, so that you're actually it's not a fair game in terms of what you're doing. So the question is then there's a certain amount of people who can become productive in our society. And one of the things, because the Jesus Center is really dependent upon the community for our existence. I need $65,000 a month to keep the Jesus Center open. So how do I do that? Well, I have 6,000 donors that I write to, and I tell them what I call middle-class success stories. Middle-class success stories are, this is what's happened to Joe, who came among us, and he was a drug addict, or he was formerly in prison, or whatever the situation was. And what's happened is he's found a spiritual home, he's found a church, he's found a job, and he's found a place to live. So he doesn't need us anymore. Now, that's what I call a middle-class success story, because if I go to a church or locally somewhere, for people frequently will tell us, and they'll say to us, well, what's your success rate? And what they mean by that, in my view, is they want the middle-class version. The middle-class version is the version that the three of us operate on, which is we're moving towards the future. We've got things that we're always working on and so forth. There's always a sort of track of where we're going. And I use that with the people who support the Jesus Center. But it's much more complicated than that. Because, for example, if you've got someone who started drinking when they were 7 years old, I can think of a person in my mind's eye now who's actually dead. He started drinking when he was seven because his parents left the vodka cabinet open while he looked after his sister. And so by the time he was a teenager, he was drinking spirits. And then by the time he's in his 30s, his mind is gone. Now, he's not going to become employed. So in other words, the question is, what is he going to find? He's not going to even become independent. He's going to get support. This particular person was a veteran, so he got some support from the veterans. So my notion is you take people where they are. For those people who are able-bodied and can work and have the desire and the motivation to work, then I'm pushing them in that direction to look for jobs. And that's not impossible to come by, but it's obviously much harder to come by than it was. I'm always recognizing that no matter how severe a person is, if this is my own sort of presupposition here, no matter how severe a person is in terms of their mental illness, schizophrenia or whatever, is that they can find life in this person, Jesus. So I try to reach a point where, without browbeating anybody, I can say, this is what we have found in this person, Jesus. This is why this place is called the Jesus Center, because Jesus reached out. He touched people. He touched the lepers. He was there with people when they were in need. We are like that. And I also want to say that although it sounds like that everything that we do serves the people who are in the community who are the least, as Randy said, which is the people who are unemployed and the poor and so forth, but it actually works the other way around too. Is I've discovered that we're a bridge between those people in the community who are struggling with homelessness and so forth, but also significant people people perhaps who are millionaires, people who've got money, people who are in churches who've got their lives together, but somehow there's something missing. So what they want to do is they want to connect with homeless people. They want to come and volunteer and serve at the Jesus Center. They want their school children to come and experience the Jesus Center. Because so, I'll tell you what, when people come and serve food at the Jesus Center, that means you get 10 seconds with everybody who comes in, who's homeless or whatever the reason they come to the Jesus Center. It change occurs on both sides, because a person will say to me sometimes, they'll say, you know, I'm four paychecks away from eating at your place, or there but for the grace of God go I, or my brother is actually suffering from drug abuse. So in other words, we're about change within society as a whole. We're about helping churches that are one-dimensional in the sense that they exist within themselves with their own denominational language and can't talk to anybody outside of that particular group. We bring them into the Jesus Center and we help them to be able to relate to other people and find significance in doing that. So from that standpoint, I'm really pleased that we're sort of a bridge builder within the community.
That
I
is
like
fantastic.
That.
You mentioned a resource center. So you actually are taking the people that are the level to where they can actually, and when I say level, they're getting their immediate needs met. They're trying to learn and get on the computers and work out other, is that
That's exactly it. It's whether it's GED or even more basic than that. For example, in our Sabbath house, that's our woman's shelter, we make it that the women who stay there, they can stay there free, is that they have to go to life skills classes every week. And these life skills classes are such things as how to balance a checkbook. I mean, when you're 17 years old and you've got a choice between putting the money you've got towards the rent in your apartment as opposed to going to a Journey concert in the local city, and you choose the Journey concert, we understand that. When you're 52 years old and you're doing that, there's problems there, obviously. In other words, the most elementary things that you and I as sort of middle-class people take for granted, a lot of the people we deal with, they don't. They've never learned that. For example, we have a course on how to recognize the difference between strangers and acquaintances and friends and what the significance of that is. Using David Byrne's book, Mood Therapy, in terms of how to orchestrate your life so that you're moving towards the positive all the time by seeing the glass half full rather than being negative. All that level, we have life skills classes that will help people to actually change their thinking so that instead of being and seeing themselves as a failure who's in need, that they get to a point where they become aware of what they can do. Now, having said that, we're not a self-help group. This is the difficulty we have. The difficulty is that ultimately we're a Christian organization, is that we believe that Jesus Christ has found the answers to life, and so we want people also to find Jesus Christ. Whereas, as opposed to being a purely secular organization that just provides jobs and helps people find jobs and gives them life skills classes, we do a mixture of both. Really, we do the life skills. We try and help them find places in which they can live, where they can get jobs. But as I say, the deep thing that we want to do is to say, you've got to find something that gives you meaning in the brokenness of your heart. And we think that's found in this person, Jesus.
That, and Jesus is amazing. I mean, we wouldn't. God, Jesus is just incredible. And I can see where the people going through those issues and the hurt and the pain. I mean, Randy and I talk about that. We kind of have this project called "It's Time to Heal," thing that is back there on the back burner, but not totally, right, Randy? Because you kind of do what you believe all the time, and we all do. But I can see where the people with, we loved God so much and Jesus, and I've never doubted God, and I've had lots of trials and tribulations in my life, and I just never once have doubted God. But I can see where somebody in that situation, because any one of us could be in that situation, no matter how much money we have, no matter how much we've done, we're human, right? And nobody knows what can put you into that situation. But I think that I love what you're doing with actually getting to be able to do it right there with the people, with Jesus, and then put him to a resource center, because somebody in that situation could say, hey, I love God, I see what you're saying, but how do I take the next step? And when you're able to have a resource center that you can come over here and it starts jiving in their brain, because if it's so new to them. That's just wonderful what you're doing. It's just with the same support, so they're not having to go outside of your support that they trust already. It's really sounds like a really good model for a lot of centers, because not all centers do that, right? You have like homeless shelters that feed and give shelter, but then they go to the social services after that, I guess, is what they do. So you try to contain it inside, I mean, in there, and then do you send them to social services, or they go wherever else they need to go, or, kind of?
Exactly. Yeah, it depends on what a person needs from that standpoint. Yeah. But I employ a full-time person whose job is to basically meet people and interview the person and find out where they need to go, what they need to do to improve their lives, you know, from that standpoint. Now, let me just give you just another, just a little tack on this, is that I've sort of been thinking in the last 8-9 months in respect to sort of looking at this theologically from the standpoint of, I think one reason that homeless people are a threat to us, by threat, I mean that we don't want to deal with them, we avoid eye contact and so forth, we sort of see them as the sort of outside.
I don't, but I know most people do. I don't, because I'm amazed. I mean, I love people, but yeah. So you're saying, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do, and you know, you could from the standpoint of the early American experience in terms of being a good Puritan, which means that God blesses you in this great country, and if you've not succeeded and become a failure, then you're sort of like an untouchable. But there's a sense in which the people that we deal with are frequently, I think they're a threat to a secularized society because of the very point that you've made. That point is that ultimately, in spite of all the securities that we try to put around ourselves, whether it's a family, jobs, entertainment, living in cities, living in a secular way, ultimately what we're trying to do is to provide safety and security and remove the threat or the fear of non-being. Ultimately, that means death. And so, therefore, when somebody has got nothing and they've lost it all, the notion is there in our lives of that could happen to us. That could happen to us. You know, I could lose everything that I've got. And so, therefore, what we do is we sort of put them out of our mind's eye. And when I was thinking about this, it took me further because I thought, what does God do on this? And I started to realize that when I looked at Jesus, I found out that he was born in a, if you can forgive the pun, in a very unstable situation. He was born in a state that was, you know, he didn't have a home. He didn't have a home from which to start off with. He starts off, he's not married. In fact, he told his followers that he didn't have a home. In fact, he said, you know, foxes have holes and so forth, and in the ground and birds have nests, but I don't have anywhere to stay. And the more you look at Jesus, what you find is that as he lived, he wasn't what I'd call a middle-class suburbanite who had everything together, but rather he lived out of this insecurity, which is ultimate security, of trusting in God to such a point where he was ultimately rejected by society and crucified outside of the city, outside of the common complex of people, with two thieves. So I ask myself, and I say this, I say, where is God found most succinctly and distinctly? He's found in the midst of a person who was put to death, that means rejected by society, somebody who was homeless, somebody who was not wanted, crucified between two thieves. There's something about in the homeless person, and of course this goes right back to what Jesus said when he said that when you help these people by giving them, you know, cups of cold water and something to eat and visiting them in prison, then you do this to me. I haven't got time to explain the parable. But the people who he's talking to say, when did we do that to you? And then Jesus says, you didn't see me, but I was in those people. There is something about connecting with people like that that helps us to get in touch with God, is what I'm saying.
Wow,
yeah,
dude.
Absolutely.
Preach it! Dude, that is so good.
That's
wonderful. I'm getting fired up. Jesus was homeless and dependent on God and a transient and all of that stuff. Dude, we need some more time with you. We've got like about a minute left. Bill Dutch,
I know this is probably a dumb question.
At the Jesus Center, and at jesuscenter.org is his website.
That was my question.
And
that was why I went
to folks,
the website.
Now, folks can not only find out more about the Jesus Center, but they can also make a donation at jesuscenter.org, right? right, Bill?
Yeah, as I say, we're going through a rough time in the summer because, as I say, I need $60,000 a month. Any donation that you can send us to the Jesus Center, we would value and we will use it and put it to work.
Awesome. Can we get you back sometime? This was really good. I think you were just getting warmed up, buddy.
Yes, I was. You just call and I'll be there.
All right, man. Thanks,
wow.
Bill.
Thank you, Bill. Thank
wow.
you, Bill.
Be
it's wonderful.
To
everybody out there, we wish you peace.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.